appreciate everybody being here. We're going to go ahead and get rolling. I have, once again, way too much stuff to get through and not enough time. Today we're going to be in Jonah. That's lesson 97. This has become one of my probably favorite books in the whole Bible. I've done a lot of, I've mentioned them all the time, the Bible Project, and they do a whole class series that's probably about 6 or 7 hours of listening on these 4 chapters of the Bible. And so I've got a lot of stuff packed in my head that I hope I can articulate well. I've talked a lot about it. We've talked some just recently about it, but we have these very evident stories in the Bible that point to Christ. And Jonah, in my opinion, is probably the best example of this. And we'll get into that here in a minute. I wanted to read a couple things just from, I don't know, I know some, most Bibles have little sections of like introductions and stuff. The Bible that I've got on my Kindle here actually has a lot of neat stuff that I've been playing with. And I actually did this on accident, if I'm going to be honest. So I want to read something in my Bible that's a little bit of a, really what it is just kind of setting, putting the setting up. Because we hear about Nineveh, and when you're in kids class you hear that, oh, Nineveh's just this wicked place, and we hear a lot of stuff about it, but sometimes it's good to hear some more historical evidences into a certain place that might help you frame it out a little bit, because there's more going on behind the scenes than just, hey, Nineveh's a bad place, and Jonah really doesn't want to go there. There's some probably bitterness towards the people group. This is a time in Israel's life where they're actually not under somebody else's thumb. Israel's on their own. They're standing alone right now, and so they kind of have their own thing going. This is before the next fall that you see. Jonah's one of what they call the 12 minor prophets. And so we see this. And your book's going to talk a little, well, we'll see how much we can get into today. But I just wanted to read this section of Nineveh. Nineveh, which was situated at the confluence of the Tigris and Kosher rivers, modern-day Mosul, Iraq, was first settled in the 7th millennium B.C. according to the Bible. Nimrod was the founder of the city. Genesis 10:11 talks about that. Major excavations took place under the direction of Henry Layard from 1845 to 1854. The diagram pictures the results of those excavations, especially they reflect the period of the Assyrian Empire, 1420 to 609 B.C., Around 1000 B.C., there occurred a great revival of the Assyrian power, and Nineveh became a royal city. It was a thriving city during the first half of the first millennium and contained such luxuries as public squares, parks, botanical gardens, and even a zoo. One of the great archaeological finds of the period is the library of King Ashurbanipal, called Osnapar in Ezra 4:10. The size of the city was approximately 1,850 acres. The book of Jonah reflects the flourishing nature of Nineveh at this time. Nineveh eventually fell to Medes and the Babylonians in 612 BC. The invading armies dammed the rivers, and it goes on from there and gives me a little picture of Nineveh. But it's easy for some country folk over in Bayfield, Colorado to kind of get this. What I want to put in your head is New Yorkers. You ever met New Yorkers? They're proud of the city and they think they're all that in a bucket of water. And that's kind of these guys. And not all New Yorkers, I don't want to say. But if you're, like, people are proud to live in New York. Right? You hear that. And so you hear that and you talk to somebody that lives there and they're proud to be from there. Why? Because there's a lot happening. And it's the city, right, in America. And so everybody wants to go visit there and everybody wants to at least visit once and see maybe Christmas lights. I think's on my wife's list, but I have zero care in the world to go to New York, but I'm sure maybe eventually she'll talk me into it, but I will go along as a prisoner. But it's kind of this big draw. And that's what Nineveh is at this time, is everything's going well, and they have these luxuries that aren't of the day, right? In this time, people are working. This isn't something that you take a weekend off and go to the zoo and the botanical gardens. This is like an unheard of segment, and they're gaining wealth and they're amassing wealth, and with that is comes this just nastiness, the evil, the greed, all the stuff that comes along with that. And so we see that play out, and what I think you see from a perspective of Jonah, and we're going to read through it, we're going to read it through at least part of it, is there's probably an arrogance to this city. And Jonah really doesn't want to go there. And not because he doesn't want something to happen to him. If you will read it, he does not want these people to be saved. Man, that's a... Whoa. In Jonah chapter 4, it talks exactly about that. It says, I know you're a merciful God. That's why I didn't want to go. Not because he didn't feel like God would protect him, not because he felt like he'd be in a bad spot, but he knew that God is a merciful God. He was afraid that these aren't the chosen, right? These aren't Israelites. This isn't a tribe. This is Assyrians who's been captured and enslaved. This people, at certain points of time, and God gives them over to the Assyrians' hands on several occasions. And now he's asking me to go save them? I'm not sure I want to share heaven with these guys. Right? And so you can start to build this picture of what Jonah's thinking about. And Jonah's an incredibly short book. We're not going to get to all of it, but I really hope y'all do read through Jonah. Because it really doesn't take a long time. Well, I thought I was tech savvy. There we go. Alright. Jonah chapter 1. It starts off fast. Like I said, super short book. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish, so he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship, and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came to him and said, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. Sound like anybody else you know, sleeping during a big storm? And they said to one another, come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation, and where do you come from? What is your country, and what people are you? And he said to them, I am Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, what is this you have done? For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them. Then they said to him, what shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us? For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. He said to them, pick me up and hurl me into the sea, then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood. For you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. When Jonah tells these people, hey, all you have to do is throw me into the sea, it's going to quiet down. What's their response? I don't know about that. Let's just keep rowing. Let's try to get back to shore. You can almost see in their head, they're like, you're fleeing from God. He's created this big storm. The lot fell on you, and you're asking us to toss you in? And what do they say when they just finally decide, hey, we're not going to make it. We better toss Jonah in. They pray to God, say, hey, Lord, let not the innocent blood fall on me. Right? You can tell there's this fear, and we see this fear over and over in the biblical narrative about the storm and the seas, and how that's something that is frightening. And how when you have a God that controls the earth, the wind, the fire, the everything, that can be startling and alarming. And what the lot cast on is what you see these people recognize, that Jonah's God is God. And one other thing that I want to say, what do they ask Jonah? Where are you from? Pray to your God. So they're setting this setting up of, this is a ship going from Joppa to Tarshish, a little trade route, and amongst these people, they're from all different conglomerates, right? They don't necessarily know each other. You pray to your God, you pray to theirs. Who are you and where are you from? They're probably this just massive chaos of conversation trying to figure out what's going on. And so in this moment we have, and what Jonah is, and my favorite little reflection and parallel, might be perpendicular, I don't know. But my favorite little parallel to Christ is, you have Jonah, this unwilling prophet. He doesn't want to, right? From the very beginning, like right off the bat, it starts off with, hey, God calls him to go to Nineveh and to talk to him. And what does he do? He's like, well, let me go to Joppa, hop a ship to Tarshish. Maybe the Lord won't follow me there. You have this unwilling prophet that has been put on a boat with all the different nations, everybody that's all around, and you have him who's going to become the sacrifice that's going to calm the seas and save the nations. Hopefully that's ringing a lot of bells right now. We're going to flip to Matthew. We're probably not going to flip there because I don't have a lot of time, but Christ reflects on the story of Jonah. Just as Jonah served 3 days in the belly of the whale, so the Son of Man will serve 3 days in the tomb. Right? And so we hear all this stuff, and you can hear the disciples probably reeling in those moments. But at this point, Jonah is almost a direct example. The difference is he's unwilling. And he's not God. But guess what? God's plan is going to come through. So we have all these parallels already, and this is even before he gets thrown overboard, the seas calms, and he gets swallowed by a fish. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. This is where we get into a lot of weeds that I don't necessarily want to jump into today. Sometimes I think people try to be too smart and try to find things that aren't there. There is a large number of people that teach that Jonah is an allegory, is not a true story. That it's just put in the Bible so that it's like a reflection and something like a moral story that you can learn from. Jonah's story in great lengths is showing you the sovereignty of God. When God has a plan, what happens? So if this isn't a true story, God doesn't appoint the fish to swallow Jonah. God doesn't cause the storm. God doesn't control all these aspects. What does that kind of do to that? Waters it down. Kind of takes it away. It's like, well, okay, that all sounds good, and that's a great principle to take, but if God can't really do this, or if God won't really do this, then it kind of discredits him, doesn't it? And so you have to be extremely careful. There's a lot of educated people out there that are trying to find stuff that nobody's ever seen before. And that's a dangerous road to walk. That's a dangerous line to toe, is when you just want to be different and want to do something that nobody's ever seen before, and you want to be this amazing scholar that points out stuff, and then you try and take away from the Bible. That's a dangerous path to toe. But I do want to point out, and your book does point that out, that that is a line of thinking through a lot of these people. When Christ talks about it in Matthew, it doesn't sound like he's just talking about a kid's story. He's talking about it with some authority, that the exact same thing's about to happen to him. So a great fish swallows Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice, for you cast me into the deep. I'm going to go skip ahead because, man, I'm getting crunched here. But he gives this prayer of thankfulness for God saving him from the waters and the storm, and he's thankful to be in the belly of the whale. And after he does this, guess what happens? The fish vomits Jonah onto the land. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it the message that I tell you. So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, 3 days journey in breadth. Jonah began to go into the city, going a day's journey, and he called out, yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. And the people of Nineveh believed God. Jonah's fears are playing out. He goes and says, in 40 days Nineveh shall be overthrown. And the people of Nineveh believed who? Jonah? God. The people of Nineveh believed God. They called a fast and put on sackcloth, from the greatest of them to the least of them. The word reached the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, removed his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he issued a proclamation and published through Nineveh, by the decree of the king and his nobles, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock taste anything. Let them not feed or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth, and let them call out mightily to God. Let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger, so that we may not perish. When God saw that what they did, how they turned from their evil way, God relented of the disaster And he said he would do to them, and he did not do it. Chapter 4. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was angry. And he prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, is not this what I said when I was yet in my country? That is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. And the Lord said, do you do well to be angry? It's a pretty drastic response, isn't it? And I think we tend to do this sometimes, right? Who gets frustrated when we see something going just abundantly well for somebody that we may have a little bit of frustration with? Probably most of us at times. And God calls us into this, and Jonah's this extreme example. He's this unwilling prophet. When Christ comes down, he is incredibly willing, and willing to save who? The most wicked, wretched people on the planet. When he eats with sinners and tax collectors. The people he hangs out around, everybody who's top of the Jewish world is kind of going, nah, there's no way this is the guy. He's hanging out with some filthy people. He probably should have recruited us first, and then we could kind of line him out and show him how things should be done. But he's the most willing prophet, Christ is, not Jonah. And he comes down to do this similar thing to a large magnitude of what Jonah was called to do. Jonah was called into it in a very unwilling attitude. But God's plan prevails. Christ, when he comes down, he extends this offer into not God's chosen people, to not Israel as a sole entity. When Christ is talking to the lady in Samaria, she's like, hey, eventually this worship's not going to happen in the temple or on the mountain. And that was probably puzzling at that time. But we have these little glimpses of what's to come, and there's just this fantastic reflection of Jonah. But I don't want y'all to take this in the wrong way. He's kind of the anti-Christ. Not in a way that we often relate that to, but he is doing things the opposite of what Christ does. Because when Jonah comes down, the first thing that happens is you have this conglomerate of nations that they cast him out, that they sacrifice him. And it saves a boat filled with many nations. He's swallowed for how many days? 3 days, and when he gets spit out, where does he go to? The most wretched people on the planet at this time. Alarm bells should be ringing. In multiple ways. Not just, hey, that sounds a lot like my Savior Jesus Christ, but probably in a way that says, hey, I'm not meant to play guardian of heaven. I'm meant to share the good news. Because maybe the people in your life that you probably are irritated with the most need to hear it the most. We talked about this little girl just a few chapters ago, or a few lessons ago. We talked about this little girl in the most pure way that was captured and enslaved by other people. And what does she say? Boy, do I know a guy that could cure your leprosy. In the most innocent way, people she probably should appall. Not be happy with. What does she do? She shares some good news. What is Jonah called to do? People that he should probably, in worldly standards, be appalled by the most, that are living in wicked, wretched sin. And guys, what we'll, what do you hear all the time in the news? Does that kind of put a bad taste in your mouth for what's going on in the world most of the time? And our human instinct is to say, I don't want any part of that. I'm just going to come to church. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to talk to my people. Lord, please come back. Last week I said I think it's one of the most inappropriate prayers, and I think Jonah shows you this. I think the way that we often do it in saying, please, Lord, come back, is a prayer of just doing this. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to have to deal with all this junk and garbage that's going on around. Why? Because it's hard. So, Lord, please come back to save me from what you've called me to do. Is that an appropriate prayer? No, but I think that's convicting of us. I've done it before. I've had to have uncomfortable conversations that I felt called and compelled to do that I really didn't want to do. And typically it's, you know what would make this just drastically easier, Lord? If you just came back and sorted and sifted right now, because I feel pretty good about myself. Wow. That's not a good place to be. I think Jonah's going through this right now where he's like, nah, that's kind of, I really don't want to do that for a lot of reasons. One of which, because I really don't like these people. They're just this cult of bad. And hey, God, don't we have it pretty good? Because right now we've kind of been pulled out of, you kind of pulled us out of the and capture times, the slave times that we're in. You kind of pulled us out, and we're our own little nation, and things aren't going bad right now. Can't you just keep pouring the blessings and the love over here and leave the rest of the people out of it? Because, you know, we are your chosen ones. Don't you think that fired God up a little bit? Don't you know? Because you see the actions that take forth from there forward. And so, as Christ did, Jonah went down for 3 days, comes back and preaches to these people. When Christ comes down and he tears the veil and he just opens this relationship, this magnificent relationship that's how it was intended to be from the very beginning. And some of us may get frustrated. That's kind of open to everybody. But if we're to live as Christ lives, who should we be talking to? The messed up. See, it's great for me to have conversations with Jeremy Homer in my office. It's easy. He's a believer. We have disagreements. We don't have the same viewpoints on everything. But that's a pretty easy conversation to have. For whatever reason, talking to somebody outside of the Christian realm, how hard is that? Because probably quite a few of you have those people in your innermost circles. Somebody that you call a friend and a loved one. And that's sometimes the hardest conversation to have. Because why? You don't want to tear apart that relationship. But how backwards is that? You're going to try to keep a friendship for however many years you have left on this earth instead of wanting them to share eternity with you? Yikes. This is a priority thing in Jonah's life. He's got all these things going on, all this cultural garbage to wade through. They're not in a bad spot right now, and he's pretty content. Jonah's a prophet. He's probably been prophesying for several years to the tribes of Israel. What do we read about in the Bible? Him prophesying to people who, by our standards, probably wouldn't deserve it, but thank God that God doesn't have our standards, because we wouldn't be there either. And we flip to the Sermon on the Mount, and we hear Kevin talk about it. And we heard Kevin talk just the other day about how, man, we can't even pass our own judgment. Our judgment, a lot of times, is stricter than God's. But our judgment for who? Not ourselves, because most of the time we go, hey, we're in. And then we look on the outside and we go, hey, maybe you're kind of on the line right now. And God said, hey, what are you doing? I think all of our classes have tied so well into the Sermon on the Mount. And I hope we're starting to see that this big sermon that Christ gives, this amazing sermon, kind of the greatest hit sermon, how deep it actually goes. I'm going to open it up for questions. I did not get through near all that is in Jonah. Chapter 4 is kind of Jonah's asking for God to take his life over and over again, or at least a couple times, and God, well, he buzzed me. This was a lot. I'm going to open it up for questions. Y'all read through it. I might do a brief thing next week with Jonah. Y'all have any comments, questions, thoughts on Jonah? In a lot of ways, he does. Yep, this is one of the things 2 years ago that was at Camp Blue Haven. Hopefully a lot of you fellows remember this, is they talked a lot about being in the moment and not this hippie way that everybody posts on Facebook and living in the moment. In a way that is cognizant and recognizes what's going on around you. Cognizant of what God may be pulling you to do. If God sets somebody on your heart, how oftentimes do we reach out? Or do we just think about them? Don't want to take anything away from prayer. Prayer is an amazing tool. And when God sets somebody on your heart, I hope that you pray for them, but I also hope you reach out. This story is pretty indicative of something getting set on your heart and not necessarily wanting to make that phone call, but hey, I'll talk to God about it a little bit, maybe. Anything else? Chapter 4 of Jonah is incredibly short. I thought I was going to be able to read it, but I got long-winded. One line that I like is, you pity the plant for which you did not labor, nor did you make it grow, which came into being in a night and perished in a night. And should not I pity Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle? Shouldn't I pity these guys who are just completely lost? Hey, that sounds like me. Right? But oftentimes we break down into these segments of we do our own sifting. It's not what we're called to do. Christ talking to everybody. I hope that's what we're challenged to do. I hope that with interactions in your day-to-day basis that you reflect him well. And you don't decide to withdraw or hold back from anybody. Thank y'all for being here. I hope y'all have a great week.